Confirmation this morning of what everyone had feared. 7-year-old Sydney boy Julian Cadman was among the 14 victims of last week's twin terror attacks in Spain. In a written statement overnight confirming the little boy's death, the Cadman family described Julian as a much-loved and adored member of our family who was so energetic, funny and cheeky, and always brought a smile to our faces. The 7-year-old was on holiday with his mum when a van mowed down pedestrians in Las Ramblas in Barcelona. It's not the first such attack. Last year, a truck mowed down pedestrians in Nice, killing 86 on Bastille Day. In the wake of that attack, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull commissioned a new counter-terrorism plan, and it's now been released. The blueprint aims to better protect public spaces from these sorts of vehicle attacks by installing bollards and other barriers in public sites such as sporting venues, shopping centres and stadiums. The Strategy for Protecting Crowded Places from Terrorism recommends a partnership with business and the private sector in consultation with police.
So we can bring all of that expertise, all of that experience and learning together to make sure that everybody is as well informed and has the tools they need to keep us safe.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull speaking yesterday as he unveiled the new counter-terrorism plan for public spaces. Andrew Colvin is Commissioner of the Australian Federal Police. Welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks, Norman. It's good to be here.
Now, this toolkit was drawn up in partnership with police. Is there one key measure you think could make a difference here, or is it lots of different things?
Look, it's obviously lots of different things, Norman, but I think that the beauty of this strategy, and I think it's a very positive development in terms of the overall security blanket that we have, but the beauty of it gives businesses an opportunity to do their own assessment. So, you know, we often talk about crowded places, we often talk about security at large sporting events or places that already have very good security in place, but what this does is give those smaller businesses, those event organisers who might not ordinarily think of themselves as being vulnerable in this sense, an opportunity to do an assessment and ask the right questions and to get the right help.
Before I go into the details, what role do insurance companies play in this? You know, if you're taking on a big event, obviously public liability insurance is a big deal. Does the creation of this strategy create an obligation on the people who are insured by the insurers that they've got to comply? Have you thought about that?
Look, I'm sure insurance companies will take an interest in what measures are in place because of the public liability, but I also think that if event organisers take the right measures, I think they've got a good discussion they can have with their insurance companies about the fact that they've taken appropriate measures and their public liability insurance could possibly come down, but I'd leave that for insurance experts.
Now, Spain has got, as I said earlier in the programme, Spain has got a good reputation for its counter-terrorism measures. It's suffered some of the worst terrorism attacks of any European country, yet they hadn't protected Las Ramblas, despite it being an obvious target. Complacency or what? I mean, I'm not asking to comment on Spain, but to what extent do you wake up in the middle of the night worrying about Australian public spaces where we're equally, let's call it, complacent?
Well, look, I think this is the great challenge for government and law enforcement and security agencies. I mean, we want Australians, as I'm sure the Spanish authorities wanted Spaniards, to go about enjoying public spaces, enjoying what their country has to offer. It's a core part of who we are in Australia that we like to get outside and we like to share our public places. Of course, we need to put measures in place to ensure that they are protected and they are safe. So, look, I don't wake up at night worrying about this because I'm confident that we're doing everything that we can, and this strategy we've released yesterday is just another step in that.
Does it include a minimum security standard?
No, not necessarily a minimum, but there is a really positive self-assessment tool which gives event organisers and asset owners an opportunity to look at what they've got and see whether the measures they've got in place now are appropriate, and if they're not appropriate, what they can do. Now, that's going to be very different from the Sydney Football Stadium to what it might be for an outdoor street market. So it's not about minimum, it's about taking an awareness of the environment around the event and making sure that the best measures in place are actually being put in place.
So what sort of questions are you asking in this toolkit, the private sector, property owners of public spaces to take into account? What should they be looking at, self-examining?
So it's things like how often do you hold events that could be considered a mass gathering? How large is the mass gathering? What are your evacuation plans and your escape routes? How can a crowd disperse quickly if it needs to? What are your contingency plans around moving people through your asset or your event very quickly? But it also asks other questions. Is it an iconic venue? Is it a venue that has a particular historic cultural significance to the country? It might make it more of an attractive target. So it's obvious questions that seem quite obvious, but we've put them all in one place so that it's quite simple for event organisers to find them.
Which implies you've got insight into the minds of terrorists and how they choose their targets.
Well, look, I'd like to say that that we do, but of course they're very unpredictable, and we know that they are adapting their measures all of the time. Yeah, clearly, attacking an iconic institution, attacking something that could be considered at the fabric of a society or important culturally to a country, is great value for terrorists. It says that it tries to give a message that they are stronger than the government. It instills fear. But what we've also seen is that the more we harden those traditional targets, the more that we have to worry about terrorists taking a much more low-key, low-sophistication attack, and that's what this is about.
To what extent does this policy deal with somebody pulling out a knife at a music festival or throwing a petrol bomb? You know, as you say, it's just low-tech with high potential for major casualties.
That's right. So, and that's the greatest challenge for law enforcement and event organisers, is to protect against those types of attack. But what this strategy does is it brings into one place a whole range of measures that event organisers can use. So, for instance, it's got plans around how you might deal with a hostile vehicle, plans for how you might deal with a chemical weapons attack, plans for how you might deal with active armed offenders, so somebody with a knife or a gun, as well as obviously the traditional measures that we have to prepare for, improvised explosive devices. So in some instances there'll be common ground amongst all of those different attack vectors, but there's also going to be very specific measures that people can take as well.
How quickly can public sites be retrofitted to improve safety, do you think?
Well, that really depends on the site, I guess. I mean, retrofitting is always difficult, and that's why it was important for us to get this strategy out there, because the best way to address cost, for instance, and the best way to address the mitigations is to do it in the design phase. Of course, we can't do that, so there are public places now that will need to be retrofitted, and we've seen that already in our major cities where bollards have been placed up or barriers have been put in place. Some of those will be interim, while longer-term plans are put in place. And I want to reassure your listeners as well, there's always a focus on bollards, and I understand that because we see bollards and there are obvious positive mitigation. But there's other ways to do this as well. There's ways that we can use the natural environment. There's ways that we can use architecture. There's ways that we can use artwork, for instance. Or, you know, as we saw in Martin Place yesterday when the Prime Minister walked through, yes, there's bollards. They're inobtrusive, and I don't think they stop anybody using Martin Place. But there's also hardened seats and hardened planter boxes, which look good and also serve a very practical security purpose.
Some security experts argue that, in fact, you can put these things in place, but the best deterrent to terrorist attacks is a heavy armed police presence.
Well, you can't have police on every corner, Norman, I would say. And the best mitigation, the best way to stop these attacks is through intelligence. And that's why agencies like the AFP, our state and territory partners and our security partners work very hard on making sure that we have access to the best intelligence possible. But there's no one thing that is going to make Australians completely safe. The threat level is at probable. Is that probable for a reason? But this is a multi-layer of defence, and this is just the most recent layer that we've made public.
Now, a lot of the emphasis in the strategy is the partnership with the private sector. What if they don't do anything? What are you going to do? I'm sure lots of people will take it up. There's reputational risk. There could be insurance risk, which is what we mentioned earlier. But some might just not bother, yet you as a police force would see a risk there. What can you do about that when it's private property?
Look, I'd be pretty concerned and very troubled if we found that asset owners and event organisers weren't prepared to work with police and with both local government, state government and the federal government to ensure that their venues are protected. Of course, as you say, they have a reputation they need to protect. They also have insurance obligations, which you pointed out at the start of this piece. there are no, in this strategy, there are no penalties, there are no repercussions for organisers that don't. But I don't believe that's going to be an issue here. I think the reality is business is calling out for this. They've been wanting us to work with them for a long time, and that's what we're doing.
Now, terrorists are going to read your strategy as well. Are you worried that you're showing your hand?
No, no. Look, if they want to read this, then fine, that's okay. Of course, we have to put in place the best measures we can, and the best way to protect against these types of attack is to get public awareness out there to make sure people know what they need to do. I think terrorists are looking constantly at what law enforcement and government agencies around the world are doing and trying to change their approach to suit. That's just part of the challenge that we have.
An hour ago we had on the program Cinta Carroll from the Australian National University talking about how there's really no such thing as a lone wolf attack. There's always some people sitting behind them. You've spoken about that as well. And they're sitting watching the news. What's your risk? What's your assessment of the risk of a copycat attack? I mean, your level of alertness at the moment is still probable, but is it going up in likelihood?
Well, no, it sits at probable, and that's because we assess that people do have the intent and developing the capability to take an attack in Australia. And I think we've seen over the last 3 years the number of potential attacks that we've disrupted, as well as the 70 plus people we've charged for terrorism related matters. So the threat is real, but what is also real is the mitigations and the work that agencies are taking to combat that threat. So again, the message to your listeners is get about what they do, enjoy the wonderful opportunities we have in Australia. We're coming up to football final season. If you've got tickets to the finals, then I encourage people to get out there and enjoy it. Yeah, and knowing that the government is doing everything it can to protect Australians.
And finally, you, in this partnership with the private sector, is there any role for the private sector, and I'm talking about property owners, employers and so on, in intelligence gathering?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely there is.
So well, how does that work?
Well, I mean, the best eyes and ears that we have are people in the community, and we've spoken a number of times about working with the Muslim community here in Australia, but also businesses. So if you're a shopping centre owner or you're a security company working at a shopping centre, making sure you're paying attention to what's going on around you, that you're looking for the obvious things that we've talked about before, backpacks that have been left unattended, but also people who don't seem to have a place, people who don't belong, people who are acting strangely and suspiciously. If you see it, don't wonder about it. We want you to report it, either report it directly to police, or of course we've talked about the National Security Hotline many times, and you know, for the sake of repeating that number, because we can't say it too many times, 1-800-123-400 is a great way, if you're not sure, to report information in.
Andrew, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me on, Norman.
Andrew Colvin, who's Commissioner for the Australian Federal Police.